our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I don't know what's more weird, baseball or the fact that you put ketchup on mac and cheese.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Because last year, this is going to be a discussion that makes me sound like the biggest hick in the history of mankind. Last year, at the county fair.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And right after we got done looking at the award-winning picks, he let me know that he had made a blockbuster trade in this keeper league. He had traded Miguel Cabrera for Steven Matz.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brenz. I am joined by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
Fantastic, wonderful, phenomenal. I mean, pick a word. That's how I'm feeling. It's good to have you back. How have you been? It's been a while.
I've been good. I'm sorry I couldn't attend our weekly podcast last week, but, life happens, and sometimes I'm just not able to come and babysit you guys, so I apologize about that.
That's okay. Everybody said that you wouldn't be back, but I told them Ben loves us too much to leave.
Wait, who said that?
People, you know.
It was Chuck Anderson, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, I guess we'll have to let Chuck on now that Justin, that Evans let the cat out of the bag. Chuck, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing just fine. I am utterly disgusted with some of the weird and odd performances going on in fantasy baseball. But I'm trying to get past it and just remember that I still really like the game, regardless of how I feel about it right now.
I mean, I don't know what's more weird, baseball or the fact that you put ketchup on mac and cheese.
I love ketchup on mac and cheese. Ketchup on fried eggs, too, is really good. So
well, that's normal because it's like a breakfast sandwich kind of thing at that point, but I'm not a big mac and cheese and ketchup guy, because I'm not weird. But you know, to each their own, Chuck.
All right, I can't help it. I'm a bit of a ketchup freak.
Yeah. All right, guys. So obviously we can be reached at bbrandsfwfb, evfwfb, and just chucking it. At some point, Chuck, you're just going to have to learn how to change your Twitter handle because it's just a really long handle for me to have to pronounce. So,
and now my blog is of note, so maybe I should be of note FWFB instead of, you know, I was originally just chucking it because that was my blog, was just chucking it.
So you could do that as well. How is that blog going for you?
I enjoy the of note column a great deal, and I'm sure much of it will leak into our podcasts over time because I do a lot of my thinking about it over the weekend and start writing it on Mondays and Tuesdays. So we'll probably cover a lot of it. Last week I did an entire list of all the fantasy offenses from 1 to 30, which got a lot of response from people. And I wrote little quippy things like naming one good player and calling the rest of their team absolute darkness and stuff like that, which people seem to enjoy as well. So just constantly trying to look at it in a little different glance than normal, and it seems to bring about a lot of interesting discussion. This week's will have a paragraph on my adoration of the stat strikeout to walk ratio, which you and I disagreed about on the chat room. So we'll go from there.
Who disagreed? I disagreed.
Yeah, you told me that a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio is manageable, and
it can be manageable if you have like a super, super, super low walk rate. It can be. It just depends on the pitcher.
But wasn't this based on the magical ratio that Chuck mentioned last podcast but didn't actually put out there when we were discussing Zach Eflin, where he said there was a level that his walk rate would actually make his low strikeout rate worth it?
Yeah, this was, I think 3-to-1 is basically bare minimum of what you're looking for. 4-to-1 is decent, and 5-to-1 is good. I think that's what we had established as the range. Is that correct, Chuck?
That is correct. And this the blog this week of note has, you know, talks about the fact that it really points to efficient pitching, like the pitcher controlling the at-bats instead of the hitters, meaning that it's a good sign. A high strikeout-to-walk ratio means that the pitcher is, you know, having the hitter have to hit in pitcher counts instead of vice versa, which is no good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you'd want to say I disagreed with you. I very much look for strikeout to walk ratio, but whatever helps your blog get more traction. If I have to argue with you, then I will gladly do so.
Well, thanks for being there for me, man. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Like we joined a high school debate team. I like it.
Exactly. Why don't we jump right into the podcast? And today we're going to be talking about a couple more teams that actually have the capability of being better than what they are. At least two of them do. But why don't we start by talking about the Tampa Bay Rays, and why don't we let Chuck start us off?
Well, the thing about the Rays right now is they're relatively nondescript offensively, which is kind of their organizational MO in recent years. They sort of try to put together an offense around a solid pitching staff. Steven Souza was off to a really hot start, and he seems to have slowed down some. Evan Longoria was coming off a really good year, but he has a foot injury, which some are saying is on the brink of being plantar fasciitis, which is something that he played through a few years ago. So I own him in NFBC, and I have some serious concerns about him going forward. I see he did have an extra base hit on Sunday, so I'm hopeful that maybe he's going to be okay. But I think if you're mining for offense off this Tampa Bay Rays roster, you're kind of in trouble. The super hot hitter right now is ex-Cardinal and ex-Houston Astro and just really weird dude, Colby Rasmus. So they're going to look to get a shot in the arm from him and his sometimes streaky power bat. You guys have any hope for Colby Rasmus? I'll give you a number. How about 14? Over or under 14 home runs the rest of the season for Colby Rasmus? What do you think, Evan?
I think I'd take the over, but, I mean, he's proven that while he can put up solid home run totals, that he just really doesn't carry a ton of value because of his production and a lot of the other categories. And like you were saying, this, you know, Tampa Bay offense, I mean, even though last year they were, you know, I think the Tampa Bay Rays had the most to do with the Dong Revolution because there was the big CDIC breakout sponsored by Yancey Eaton. But I like the power number that you put on, but I'm not necessarily sold on Colby Rasmus as a fantasy option per se.
Maybe I gave you the wrong number. Maybe I should have said 280. Do you think he hits 280 this year?
No, I'd probably take the under.
I feel like he won't even get to 300 with an OBP because he's probably, if you gave me like a 240, I would say that's a little bit closer to what I was expecting.
Oh.
I'm not a big Colby Rasmus fan. I like Colby Rasmus's skill set. I just think he doesn't know how he strikes out too much, and it kills all of what his last year early in the season. He had a very good start to the season. He was taking walks. He was hitting for power. He was hitting to all fields, and then all of a sudden, just kind of went away. He was striking out too much again, and he lost the ability to make the improvements and carry those improvements through the entire season. And as a result of that, I think that it makes me a little bit worried that he's going to be able to do that well. Now, he'll platoon this year at least a little bit, so that could help his batting average. But, you know, we've seen certain players that get platooned and they still don't get their average into a great spot. So we'll end up seeing what happens.
There's only one more player I want to mention. If I was in a dynasty league like you guys are, the one person I would not be afraid to acquire, and maybe it's just because I'm rooting for him because he toiled as a top prospect for so long, that would be Tim Beckham, their shortstop. I would venture a guess I would rather have Tim Beckham than Tim Anderson at this point. So Tim Beckham is somebody, a fringe guy that I think everyone should keep an eye out for. You guys have any thoughts on Tim Beckham?
I mean, it's funny that you brought up Tim Anderson. We were talking before we fired the mics up that Tim Anderson I can't remember if he leads the majors or he's second in the majors in 0-2 counts. And I mean, his strikeout rate kind of shows that he would be falling behind a little bit. But Beckham's strikeout rate is, you know, 30. Well, no, I'm looking at a split here. Never mind. I don't know. I'm not terribly excited about Beckham, but I don't really think, you know, paying for shortstop is the way to go in Dynasty personally. I don't know how you think, Ben.
I mean, in a deep league, I'm okay with Tim Beckham because he's currently a top 12 option in ESPN standard for Roto. So I'll be happy if he's able to give you top 20 value and you're in a deep enough league that he's able to potentially get either a starting shortstop gig or a middle infield position for you, depending on how your league format is. But, you know, I'm not overly happy with how Tim Beckham's career has gone, but it's nice to see him having a good start to the season. I agree with Chuck. I would definitely pick him over Tim Anderson because Tim Anderson just doesn't really seem to know how to not strike out, doesn't know how to really do anything correct at this point of his career in the majors. So it is good to see that Tim Beckham's finally having a good start to the season, and we'll see if it can carry over into at least summer months. And if he gets at least another month or two at this pace, I think that he'll be a good player going forward.
Well, it is a little disconcerting that Tim Beckham has a .236 batting average with a .355 BABIP. I would call that fairly ominous.
He has .264 average.
He's striking out a ton. Like, I mean, going to kill his average.
Beckham or Anderson?
Tim Beckham.
Beckham has a .264 average.
Yes.
Why am I seeing .236 on Fangraphs?
.264.
I'm going to chalk that up to the ketchup.
it could be the ketchup. Is the .355 BABIP incorrect too? Then
no, and that's correct.
Oh, how odd. Okay.
Well, at this point in the show, why don't we give it over to Evan?
Well, yeah, when things get weird, let's just get weirder, huh? If you want to talk Tampa Bay hitters, I guess I'll throw up Brad Miller, who has the third highest walk rate in the majors behind Harper and Carpenter. And I don't really understand why, because his batting average sucks. His right-handed pitching profile is really weird. The walk rate skyrocketed. And he's not getting the pop from righties because he can't get the ball off of them. I think he's hitting .190 on the year. And he actually has a similar BABIP to last year when he hit .240. So I'm not 100% if it's just because the ball isn't leaving the field or, you know, what exactly is going on with Miller. This is a guy that hit a huge power breakout last year. So I don't know if you guys are fixing to buy or...
I like Brad Miller's situation in Tampa. I don't think he's really a very good second baseman, but that doesn't matter to us in fantasy. I saw him steal third this weekend. He's got a lot of extra base pop for a middle infielder. So even if he eventually gets moved to first, like people thought maybe he would this year, I think for the next couple years, I think Brad Miller has a really good shot at holding good value. Kind of reminds me of Chris Owings in a way, as far as a player that came up in the middle infield and had stretches of decent play and now suddenly has had a really long stretch of good play. And I think you could do a lot worse. Brad Miller is underrated and I think he's going to hold value all year.
I have no issues with Brad Miller. What I'm worried about is what happens when Matt Duffy comes back, because Matt Duffy is going to play somewhere. So does that mean that they move Duffy over to short and they put Tim Beckham over at second potentially? And if that's the case, do they then move Brad Miller to first? Do they put him on the bench if Logan Morrison's playing well? They don't really have a spot in the outfield to put him right now. So it really just depends. If he doesn't get this average up, I could be a little bit worried that he may start losing playing time in the next few weeks. And if he does, obviously his value is going to take a massive hit. But when he plays, he's still, if he's able to improve the batting average, and with it, the power should be able to come back to some degree, I think that he could be a decent corner/middle infield player for you. It just really depends on how desperate and how deep the league is, because he's going to probably end up chipping close-ish to 10 steals, maybe a few more on the season. But if he could get up to the 15 home runs, then that would be an improvement considering where he is right now.
Right on. Well, see, who would have thought that Brad Miller would get us back on track? Let's try this again. I think this is a fantastic time to move to the pitching. I don't know if you guys have any other offensive players you want to bring up, but, you know, we kind of hinted that that's the strength of their team. Everybody's pitching, you know, well above, you know, what their sabermetrics say they probably should be at, as far as like FIP. Odorizzi, Snell, Andrees. And we'll even kind of throw Cobb in there because he's on the fringe of these endpoints. They all have ERAs below 3.5 and FIPs over 4.5. Cobb is, you know, right on those fringes. But a lot of these guys are outperforming. The one dude I'm really interested in is Jake Odorizzi, who we had a little trivia time. His 169 batting average against is third best in the league. Chuck actually got Irvin Santana, which was fantastic, and I applaud him for. And Chris Sale, who's pretty damn good. So I don't know if you guys have any Odorizzi thoughts, or if you just think that this rotation is getting by on smoke and mirrors here.
I think I would like to know their schedule and how their schedule has fallen as far as the offenses that they've played. I mean, playing in their division, you would assume. I know the Red Sox have underachieved to this point, but how heavy a dose of the Yankees and the Orioles that they've had would make this even, you know, even more impressive. It's just, it's tough because I listen and search out a lot of information, and the stuff that I had heard about Odorizzi was that he really didn't have a very good pitch mix, meaning that he was basically a two-pitch guy, and that his third pitch, he was always going to struggle with his third pitch. And so when, you know, when people who devote almost all of their time analyzing pitching come up with a weakness in a guy, it almost frustrates me when they excel this as much as Odorizzi has excelled so far this year. I do know a lot about Odorizzi's history because he was originally a Brewer farmhand and then got traded to the Royals in the Zach Greinke trade, and then, of course, got shipped over to the Rays in the deal that involved James Shields, I believe. Anyway, so I have a hard time betting on people in the AL East. So it's interesting that there's so much value in their pitching this year. Last year, I was heavily invested in their pitching, and it really burned me because they struggled so bad at home. So I'm not going to go so far as to say smoke and mirrors, but I am waiting for the bottom to fall out a bit on almost all of the Rays starters. I'm using Matt Andrees this week for two starts in a very important league to me. It's a Tuesday to Monday league, so that he might not have two starts with everyone. But even though he's got a very hard matchup, one of his matchups is very difficult, he's still somebody who's really, really surging right now. Somehow or another, Tampa always seems to be producing major league pitching and valued major league pitching is trade-worthy, et cetera, around the league. But at the same time, so tough to trust the AL East. What do you think, Ben?
I mean, I'm really thinking that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors here, and I want to believe in these pitchers because I like what they bring to the table, and I like the pitchers overall. I think Alex Cobb is a player who could be a very good pitcher. I like Odorizzi. I think he could be good as well. But there's just so much smoke and mirrors, and I'm not really going to believe that all of these guys are just going to outperform their FIP the entire year, especially when it's a run differential like this. I can't see it because there's just no way that like Odorizzi keeps his walks down to this amount. His whip is going to come up with his ERA. His strikeouts just aren't high enough for me to want to believe that he's going to be continuing to get people out at this kind of clip. With Alex Cobb, he's just nowhere near the amount of strikeouts what I'd like, considering how many innings he's had for the entire season. I like Alex Cobb, but I don't know if he's going to be there. Blake Snell, I just don't trust whatsoever. His whip is ridiculously high. Andrees is maybe the player out of this list who I'm actually the most comfortable with because I had the least amount of expectations for him. And even him, I'm not a fan of his whip. It's way too high for me. Anyone over a 1.2 is just, I can't use him. And I'm willing to use a lot of different pitchers, whether you're good or bad. I can use Sabathia at times. I don't care. But when that whip gets 1.2, I can't use you. I can't. And it's just the way I build my teams.
Well, it's the same with Blake Snell. It's the walks, because the only guys with worse walk rates than him right now are Edinson Volquez, Andrew Cashner, and Francisco Liriano. Like, Liriano, you can play because of the strikeouts, but, I mean, this is the same scenario that you have with these guys. Like, does the benefit of, you know, whatever they do in the other categories outweigh the fact that they're going to absolutely, you know, destroy your whip? And I'd be interested in Snell if he could get the walks down, absolutely, but I don't know if his struggles make me more interested in, say, like, a Brent Honeywell or, you know, any of these other names in the AAA rotation who I think could be halfway interesting. I'm not a prospect guy, you know, per se anyway, so I don't know if you guys have thoughts either.
It's hard not to like Blake Snell's minor league numbers, although he has always struggled with control, and you almost have to take on a punt whip sort of strategy right now to own and use Blake Snell on a regular basis. Even favorable matchups scare me. And his strikeout, his propensity to get people to strike out once there's a bunch of runners on base is great, but it definitely shows up fantasy-wise. I mean, it's amazing that he keeps his ERA as low as he does with the kind of walk rate that he has. We've done a lot of talk about K per bases on balls, and he's a guy that just jumps out to you that you can look at his numbers and say, well, he's just not pitching effectively enough. And in the long run, all the higher pitch counts means that he's not going to get very many wins either. So until he shows a massive improvement, like, he needs to cut his walks in half. I mean, you know, until that happens, I'm going to steer very clear of Blake Snell, despite the fact that he's got tremendous upside if he could fix his main pitching concern. How about you, Ben? You're a prospecty guy. What do you think of Blake Snell? You think it's going to turn?
No.
He's going to turn it on, or
no,
what?
He's just too inconsistent. There's just nothing about what he's doing right now that makes me think it's just going to all of a sudden click in his head. When I've heard Matt Thompson and Mike Warner talk about him, Matt being the prospect guy that he is, and Matt and Mike watching and being a Tampa Bay fan, there's no way that I can believe that Blake Snell is just going to turn it around. It's just extremely difficult because he's not showing any signs of improving that walk rate, and until he does so, it's just like you said, he's in a bad spot. But he gives up too many hits as is. And when he gives it too many hits and he's not showing any improvements because he has very little control of some of his pitches, it makes it really tough. He's just too raw of a pitcher, and being able to pitch in the major leagues is not just going to help him miraculously get better at it. I'd like to see that improvement happens, but I don't believe it, at least for another year. Maybe next year he finally starts to figure it out, but I'm still staying off that bandwagon.
He's teetering on six walks per nine innings, and his K rate is down under 8 Ks per nine. So that's pretty dangerous stuff, to say the least. And he's actually been pretty fortunate because he's only given up a .261 BABIP, when actually in years past his BABIP was a lot greater than that. So there's a lot. He is inducing more ground balls and giving up home runs at a slightly lower rate than he has during different stretches of his career. But it's hard to see anything underlying in the peripherals that should make you think that Blake Snell is about to come out of it. Just don't see it.
Yeah, his strike minus walk percentage is absolutely horrible. And we can use this as a transition because Matt Harvey sucks as well. Ben, tell me what the hell is going on with New York, if you either want to talk about fantasy or a real life standpoint, because I'd really like input on either front.
Well, I from a real life perspective, Matt Harvey is really pissing off management overall. This has been happening since 2 years ago, basically. Just the way that he conducts himself off the field, the way that he handles himself with Scott Boras, being a Scott Boras person in general, it doesn't help your case because of how Boras is. But, you know, Matt Harvey's not doing anything to help himself. He's clearly not going to get back to the same level that he was a couple years ago. That's going to require some time, if it comes back at all. The Tommy John surgery, the thoracic outlet syndrome injury, those two things have just kind of crippled his fantasy value overall. And he's just giving up too many hits. His whip is way too high considering what it was in the past. And because he's giving up too many hits, he's giving up a lot of base runners, giving up a lot of extra runs, and he's just not striking people out to the same capacity that he was. So for that, it's really hurting. The team's defense is down because there's so many injuries, so that's not helping. It just, the Mets team overall has been so ravaged by injuries that it's not helping the pitching staff in any capacity, and the way that he plays, he puts all the pressure on himself, and because he's not able to get back to the same level that he was a couple years ago, that is hurting him at this current time.
When we know that Matt Harvey was altered last year, and his numbers are all going in the wrong direction this year, and he's in trouble with management over a little clubhouse prank, et cetera, and so forth. There's just a lot not to like about what's going on with Matt Harvey right now. I thought it was a ridiculous gamble that people were making, drafting Matt Harvey, you know, only, you know, 20 or 25 picks after, you know, where he had been taken in years past. So I'm kind of grinning from ear to ear about this one. This is one of the few things this year that I can say has gone about what I thought it was going to. His K per 9 is down from 7.4 to 5.1, which is just dreadful for a guy who, you know, was at 10.62 at one point in his career. He's too young to have enough experience to really know how to pitch without throwing, and that's what I keep hearing about him. Home run to fly ball rate, 21.9%. I mean, his FIP is worse than his ERA, and his ERA is 5.14. I mean, and I'm sorry, that offense is not going to do you any favors in, you know, in wins either, meaning that, you know, now without Cespedes for a while, without Duda for who knows how long, etc. It just seems to me like this is a lost venture that really didn't have much guidance in trying to get anything but a huge discount to begin with. And I think there was a huge variation on where Matt Harvey went. But at the same time, if anybody really bought in and thought that he was going to save your pitching staff, I hope plan B, C, D, and E are going to help make up for this huge step back that you're getting from Matt Harvey.
Yeah, he's got a 5.14 ERA, and that's with a 236 BABIP. Like, the left on base percentage is just under 70%, which is a bit lower than league average, but he actually has the second best left on base percentage of the Mets staff right now, behind Jacob DeGrom. It's not like he's Gieselman or however you say his name.
Gieselman.
Sure, yeah. His left on base rate is just over 55%, which kind of justifies his ERA, which is 6.75. So Harvey's been having trouble with lefties over the past two seasons. If you go take a look at those numbers, Fangraphs split tool. But I was really hands off on Harvey. And it was weird because the comp or the kind of the area he was going in was like the Felix Hernandez territory. And I was, you know, pumping up Felix more, and it feels like that was just kind of a lose-lose situation and a waste of everybody's time. So
the Mets right now are just in a really bad spot. They've lost their best hitter. Granderson's not performing well. They've just lost Asdrubal Cabrera, Until recently, Jose Reyes was not playing well because Dude is on the DL and Neil Walker's not playing well. They didn't have Familia right away. Now Harvey is suspended for a few games and he's not playing well. Steven Matz is on the DL. Zach Wheeler is doing the best he can considering that he missed two seasons. Gisellman's, like you said, he hasn't had a great season, but there's numbers to back up that he can get better. And right now they're actually considering starting Tommy Malone on Wednesday night's game. Like, hello.
At least you have Michael Conforto.
Yeah, well, Conforto's done well, but they now need to really get rid of Granderson once Yoenis Cespedes gets back, because there's no other way for him to play until someone else gets moved. Chuck, do you want to take a guess, just as a trivia question, do you want to take a guess at what Tommy Malone's K-to-walk ratio is this year?
Oh, God. I didn't realize that Tommy Malone somehow is, you know, Major League Driftwood that ended up on the East Coast with the Mets to begin with, so that was news to me that he's going to start for them. I'm going to guess that it's horrible. I'm going to guess that he is walking like twice as many people as he's striking out.
He is striking out people at an 8-to-1 clip to walks. 16 strikeouts to 2 walks in the season.
Well, this is the rare outlier then who needs to strongly consider throwing more balls outside the strike zone or something.
Yeah, well, the problem is he's given up 6 home runs on the season, so that's why his ERA is at 6.43.
Yeah, that's pretty immense. I would like to touch on Conforto because I want to pick Ben Brennis's brain a little bit about Mr. Conforto. I'm wondering what you think Conforto's upside is for this year and next year. Do you think that Michael Conforto can be a top 30 outfielder, or do you think that's too ambitious?
No, I think he can be. I think that he can be a 22 to 26 home run guy. I think he can be a 90 RBI guy, an 80 run guy. You know, maybe he could get like 4 or 5 steals on season and hit 300. I think that's the type of player that Conforto could be at his peak.
Well, that's very good news. I mean, I think Conforto is a guy that, you know, people wanted to take, but a lot of shallower drafts they were afraid to take. But I'm in a couple of keeper leagues, and I decided to invest in him there, figuring maybe the situation would work itself out. If the rest of my roster could stay relatively healthy, then I could perhaps have a keeper value going forward. What about you, Evan? Where are you on the Michael Conforto debate? Do you think Michael Conforto could be an elite outfielder?
I mean, elite is the word that you throw in that gives me a little bit of pause. I think he can be a really good outfielder. I think he could be like a number 3 outfielder for your team. And so like you're saying, that 30 range, yeah, I think that's totally within the realm of possibilities for him. He's hit a lot better against right-handed pitching this year compared to what he did last year. I think the spot should be there for him. Curtis Granderson's terrible. Like, he just needs to go bye-bye. And, I mean, Cespedes can barely stay on the field, sorry to say. But I think the time should be there for Conforto, and he should be a solid option for you when he's there.
Well, that's good news on a Mets offense that really has not produced very many diamonds in the rough recently. It seems like Asdrubal Cabrera, as inconsistencies have sort of caught up to him. And the one other thing I really want to talk about on the Mets is I want to talk about Ahmed Rosario, which you guys playing Dynasty, etc. know he's having an incredible minor league season right now. And they're having to use Jose Reyes quite a bit at shortstop, as is right now. So do you guys, what do you think the timetable is for Ahmed Rosario? And how much fantasy impact, offensive impact, do you see in Ahmed Rosario's bat? Ben, this should be right in your wheelhouse, brother.
I think that Ahmed Rosario could be a decent to good fantasy player. He's a better real life player than a fantasy player because he brings a lot of good defense. But because of how good his defense is, that will keep him in the game, which is nice for fantasy purposes. But he's a good average guy. He's not going to have a ton of home run power, but he's going to have you know, maybe high teens to high single digits to low double digits home runs potentially. He's going to be most likely a player type of player that would hit at the top of the order, so he could be like an 80 plus run guy with a close to a 280 to 300 average. So I do like Ahmed Rosario for that, but the defense is something that the Mets have not had at shortstop in a really long time that comes with a bat as well. They had players like Ruben Tejada, who was a good defensive shortstop but with terrible fielder. They had Wilmer Flores, who was a terrible defensive guy but a decent offensive bat until this season. Now they finally have someone who's kind of an all-around package, and the fact that he's a top five prospect right now in baseball, not necessarily just fantasy, but just baseball in general, that shows that he's developed to the point where he's actually someone who they're actually looking to bring up, but they don't want to start to clock too early if they don't have to.
All right, I'm hopeful for Ahmed Rosario as well. It just seems like with the dearth of offense that that team manages to have, it's odd that they have log jams at various positions around around the diamond and around the infield, which, you know, just comes from their investment in perhaps too many aging outfielders, sort of spills over into the infield. So it seems to be an issue that they're going to have to resolve going forward. Just seems like they've overinvested in their pitching to a certain extent. As a Mets fan, Ben, do you ever think that maybe they should have traded some of the pitching for offense at some point in this process? I know they were very stern about not trading any of these pitchers, and now it just seems like a lot of their values are because of durability issues or inconsistencies. It seems like a lot of their values have literally been cut in half. Do you ever wish you could play revisionist historian and get them to trade some of these prospects? Maybe, you know, Zach Wheeler, who almost did get traded, who's actually seems to be pitching okay right now. But do you ever wish that they had pulled off a trade for some of the pitching for more offense, Ben?
I mean, yes and no. Based on the trades that they could have completed for like a Zach Wheeler or a potential package that they could have theoretically put together for Harvey, yeah, it could have been great, but if they gave it a World Series run 2 years ago, it makes it almost tough to want to give that up, especially because they were not considering that at all. They did move Michael Fulmer, and they were able to get Yoenis Cespedes out of it. And now, yes, Cespedes has had injuries, as Evan has pointed out, and I'm sure fantasy owners are very well aware that he does get injured. But at the same point in time, when he is healthy, he does produce, and he produces at a very good clip for you. He's the best hitter that they have on the team. Some of the other pieces that they've got, they've been able to trade lesser players for. So, yeah, it could have been great to trade some of the pitching away. But at the same point in time, right now they've just, you know, Matt Harvey has had the Tommy John and the thoracic outlet syndrome that have brought his value down. Zach Wheeler missed two seasons because of a Tommy John surgery. Last year you had DeGrom, who had an injury. Now you have Syndergaard with an injury. It just makes it really tough when all of your starters continually are getting hurt. And then that's not even with Steven Matz, who's been out a ton over the last 2.5 seasons. It just makes it tough to have any consistency. But if they were theoretically all healthy at the same time, with that offense healthy, they'd be a very good team. So I'm okay with them not trading the pitching, because none of the deals that they could have potentially completed, I would have been overly happy with. The Carlos Gomez for Zach Wheeler, I think that they were better off not doing that because they got Yoenis Cespedes. So, you know, it's kind of playing too much in revisionist.
Well, I don't know how you're going to say Cespedes is the best hitter on the team. Jay Bruce has been an animal, dude. He's hitting 281. Like, what are you talking about? I'm just kidding. Cespedes is a much better hitter, but Jay Bruce has had a phenomenal season. Steamer didn't even project him for 20 home runs. So where do you guys think he falls real quick in the power department? He's got 9.
I mean, I personally think that he's going to be like a 25 home run guy. And I had heard a report that when he had come over last year, the problem was is he had been hearing himself into trade rumors for a while. So he apparently that started to get to him at the end. before he had left Cincinnati. And then when he came over to the Mets, he was going from hotel to hotel to teammates' apartments and stuff like that. He didn't have a place to actually stay and live for the first few months. And that's why, like, apparently it was screwing up his groove, how he played. And that's why he just performed so terribly bad. But I think that we're starting to see a better type of Jay Bruce. Now, I don't believe that the average is going to stay here, but at least right now he seems a lot more comfortable with how he's playing. So I think as long as he's able to stay healthy, I think that he could be a 25 upside guy in terms of power.
Wow, I knew that it was expensive to live in New York, but when Jay Bruce is struggling to find a
it's
tough to find a home when you move mid-season and you're playing every day. It's not like you. It's tough to make your family just up and move during the middle of the season. So that's
you don't have to get a home. Get a Holiday Inn or somebody to sponsor Jay Bruce.
But that's
and his
what I'm
family.
Saying. He kept going from hotel to hotel, or from that to a teammate's apartment to crash for a few weeks. Like, there's no consistency, and when you're a baseball player, that kind of screws with you. I'm pretty sure that we've pointed it out. I'm not sure if it was you, Evan, or if it was Matt Thompson. Someone was talking about the Colorado AAA team, I believe, not having a home ballpark last year. If I recall, you guys can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but because of that, they had to stay in hotels all the time when they were home, and they didn't play. They played on the road all the time because of that, and it screwed up a lot of the consistencies that some ball players like to have of being able to go home and stay in one place as opposed to jumping from place to place.
Well, Jay Bruce is 30. He's used to, you know, staying in different hotel rooms. He can, you know, sleep somewhere else other than home. And if David Freese can win World Series MVP while he's sleeping on somebody's couch, I think Jay Bruce can figure it out for a couple months.
Yeah, but there's a difference between a couple months and, you know, half of a season, like in which you can stay at home for literally half of the season. When you're on the road all the time and you're changing places every 3 days for 3.5 months, it makes it a little bit tough. I can understand it.
Ben, that is literally the worst excuse for poor play that I've ever heard. He makes $51 million his contract is worth. And I don't know, it just seems like there's been a pretty large sample size of people being traded for various portions of the season. And I do, you know, I would prefer the excuse that he went from the Cincinnati media to the media in New York would be my preference to hear as an excuse. But regardless of that, I want to switch topics here briefly, because last year, this is going to be a discussion that makes me sound like the biggest hick in the history of mankind. Last year at the County Fair, a friend of mine who plays fantasy baseball with me was there. And right after we got done looking at the award-winning pigs, he let me know that he had made a blockbuster trade in this keeper league, and that he had traded Miguel Cabrera for Steven Matz. So how do you think that works out? Do you think that's a good trade long-term yet? What do you think the chances are that Steven Matz returns Miguel Cabrera-like value in a trade? You should have seen how wide my eyes were while he was telling me this. He was also three sheets to the wind, by the way. But besides all that, literally a guy in our league traded Miguel Cabrera for Steven Matz. How much upside do you see in Steven Matz in making that trade even remotely palpable? What do you think? What do you think there, Ben?
Yeah, that's not going to return to that.
Yeah. So that's a true story, though, unfortunately. They traded Miguel Cabrera for the stretch drive last year to the guy who eventually won our league. So go figure.
Hey, real quick. So we were talking about teams, and the other topics that we were going to get to tonight were how wrong we were. And let's start with Ben, since we're on his favorite team. Ben, I hate to say I told you so on Neil Walker and the left-handed power from last year, but, I mean, I kind of told you so, dog.
I'm not wrong.
You finish the sentence.
I'm not wrong.
Yeah, Ben just hasn't been proven right yet, and I'm hoping that Neil Walker turns it around, because literally Ben's the only reason that I'm holding on to this douchebag in some of my utility spots.
Yeah, boy.
Tell me why I should feel confident in Neil Walker going forward. Talk me off the ledge of dropping him.
I mean, if you want to drop him, drop him. It's your team, not mine.
Give me more than that. Give me something to believe in. Come on.
I mean, Chuck, you want to jump in here?
Well, I've been perusing these numbers. His walk rate is up 1%. His K rate is down 2.5%. He has a 231 BABIP. That's pretty ridiculous. That was 302 and 306 and 333. So it was over 300 in three of the last 4 years. So the numbers. Wait, that
you're
we look
on his
at regularly.
Page?
Yes.
Okay, tell me what his WRC plus number is, and tell me how that is anything good for what he's done for his career.
Yeah, 668 is a terrible WRC plus. But as far as, you know, the other numbers, I have to believe that they portend to, you know, a major league veteran probably having better results. Not worse results, and the results so far have been, you know, absolutely, absolutely putrid. Incredibly, incredibly dreadful. 13 runs, 12 RBIs with 2 home runs in 127 plate appearances. That's not even close to replacement level. So I understand that part. Maybe you understand WRC plus better than me, Evan. So why don't you explain the stuff that's involved in WRC plus so I can better understand how this WRC plus could be so low with some of the peripherals looking actually a little bit better.
Okay, so WRC plus is based on a average scale where 100 is average. And just for example, that Neil Walker has never been below average. He had a 108 back in 2015. He had a 106 in 2011. He's been a league average guy. But WRC plus is it's largely based on WOBA, which his is 271. He's a career 335 guy right now. And it's league and park adjusted, but it's kind of hard to factor those numbers in. But that's where he's, and I don't know if it's because the average is absolutely tanked, which is going to have a hand in your WOBA, even if your walk rate is high. But
is there any thought that there's some lingering effects from the back injury? You asked us to try and be positive, so I'm trying to be positive for Ben here. Is there any chance that that maybe he sort of just plays his way out of it naturally?
I mean, it could happen, but who was it that I can't think of the guy's name from last week. He was amazing. And he said, Father Time is undefeated. And this is a, 31-year-old with, the back issue, like you said. I mean, there's a chance that it's lingering and that he could play through it. There's a chance that it's lingering and could also, derail his season here very shortly. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to pretend to know this. I can just look at his ISO and say that, yeah, even if the walk rate is up and the strikeouts are down, like, he's just not being productive right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's no ands, ifs, or buts about that. I mean, some of the peripheral numbers that I pointed to could be the fact, that until recently Jose Reyes was struggling. Jay Bruce is really kind of the only guy, when Cespedes is out of the lineup, that's actually been playing pretty well until Conforto started getting leadoff, the leadoff nod, etc. So there's a lot going wrong offensively for this team. So maybe some of the peripheral numbers for, accounting stats and stuff stand a chance at improving as well as time goes on. But Ben, I didn't mean to cut in on you. Ben, why don't you preach your case on why you think Evan is being a little overly gloomy about our man Neil Walker?
I mean, I expect Walker to be able to improve. His ISO is incredibly far down compared to what his career average is. His BABIP is very low. Yes, he's had some bad luck, but at the same point in time, he hasn't done a lot to help himself either. But I do believe because he is a streaky player, look at what he did last April. He hit like 10 home runs in the month of April. So we know that he can be a streaky player. All he needs is one good month to get back on track. And it wouldn't be surprising if once it gets a little bit warmer, if he does make some improvements. I mean, there's a reason that you're holding on to him, Evan, is because you know that he can be one of the better second basemen overall, and he has 20 home run power. I just don't know if at the age of 31, if he's completely done. It doesn't seem like it to me, but I do think that he can improve. I think that he's going to get better as the season goes on. I mean, right now his home run to fly ball rate is less than 5%. Last year was over 16%. So, you know, he's getting some bad luck with that, and he's not getting as great of a hard hit rate as last year. So it's just making it a little tough for him overall because of that.
Yeah, the reason that I'm hanging on to him is that he could be a guy with a 340 OBP. I play in a lot of OBP leagues. If the batting average semi-corrects itself, he's a decent shot to hit, you know, 16 to 18 home runs. And given the Mets' injuries, he's going to find himself in a productive spot in the lineup. That's why I'm hanging on to him. But his peripherals are suggesting that it's just empty right now. So, I mean, I didn't mean to pile on you and say that, you know, it was just you being wrong. You want to talk about me being wrong? Will that make you feel better?
No.
No? Well, it'll make me feel better to just say, fuck Dansby Swanson, man. Like, what an asshole. No, I still love Dansby, but he's the only, like, the only person with a WRC plus worse than him is Devin Travis right now. And he's coming up on passing his plate appearance total from last year, you know, when he was hitting 302, and now he's hitting 151. He's in the toilet, and we would kill for the 261 he hit in the minors last year. The BABIP should figure out a little bit in between. You know, I don't think it's going to be anywhere what it was last year, but it shouldn't be, you know, the 187 that it is this year. He's doesn't have a good batting average on grounders, and he's not a guy with prodigious pop. But I thought he was going to do something with how SunTrust is playing. Maybe he just needs to develop a little more of a line drive profile. Chuck, do you have any thoughts on Dansby that are halfway positive?
I'm struggling with this one because I was pretty awestruck at the helium that he was getting during the drafting season. You know, he did have a 333 batting average last year when he was in lower, you know, when he was in the lower divisions of the minors. But I never really saw anything in his batted ball profile that really got me excited about him hitting wise. He did end up with 9 home runs overall. Actually 12 home runs overall last year, which wasn't dreadful, but it's just, he came out of Vanderbilt. I think the spotlight was put on him. He was the nugget in part of such a bad trade that was so widely panned by the industry that I think people just wanted to anoint him as, you know, the next really great major league shortstop. And I'm struggling to see how he's going to do that offensively, unless he's going to, you know, blossom as he gets closer to 27. I mean, he's in his age 23 season right now. There's just no carrying tool that you get excited about. You know, he had 13 total stolen bases last year. I'm struggling to see this. I really am. He doesn't strike out a lot. So, you know, he kind of has that profile of, you know, a decent bat control kind of player, and people got excited because he was going to bat second, and people thought being in front of, you know, Freddie Freeman and Matt Kemp, you know, definitely meant that good things were going to happen being after Ender Inciarte. But this is turning into an offensive nightmare pretty fast. 222 OBP and a 217 slugging. It's not that easy to have that low of an OBP and still have your slugging percentage to be worse. He's got a 439 OPS right now. So I apologize, Evan. I know you love him, but it looks really, really bad right now.
Yeah. I mean, a couple things, like, I hate the Braves organization for the Andrelton Simmons trade, where they tried to pass off Eric Eibar as, like, reasonable goods, and then he just sucked donkey dick, because that's what Eric Eibar does. But let's not fool ourselves that the Shelby Miller trade was for Ender Inciarte, who has a phenomenally team-friendly contract through 2021 and even a buyout for 2022, where we can pay him less than $10 million. I think we're going to go ahead and do that. But as far as Dansby Swanson's concerned, I think part of it is, like I said, just the BABIP, but he's struggling. Ben, let me have it on Dansby Swanson. I deserve it. Just go ahead. Take out all your frustration.
Evan, he sucks. You're just terrible. I'm sorry. I don't know if there's a place for you on the show after that type of pick. Like, that's... I feel bad saying that.
I'm okay with it.
Now, he's just having a really, really bad start to the season. I still think that do I expect him to hit his projections for the season? Probably not. I mean, is it impossible that he gets to 11 steals and the 10 home runs that ESPN was predicting in the .267 average? No. I think that he's very capable to get back to those numbers. All he needs is a couple good months. I just think that he needs to significantly improve, and he hasn't been having a great season at the top of the lineup. But, you know, I think that he will do better. And maybe he just needs to be, where is he hitting in the lineup, Evan?
He's been hitting down at like eighth. And I alluded to this in one of the off season episodes where I had the conspiracy theory that he would suck and Brandon Phillips would get moved up to the two spot. And I was halfway excited. And then Phillips got hurt and you're back to seeing like Adonis Garcia bat in that spot in the order. But, I just wonder how good Dansby would actually have to be to get moved back to the two spot after, you know, the terrible start that he's gotten off to.
I mean, it would take a while for him to get back there just because of how bad he's played, but at least there's some hope. You know, he's still a young player, and young players can go through these type of stretches, so it's not unlike him to potentially have a bad stretch and then have, you know, two good months. I do think right. that he's very capable of that type of play. I'm not going to write him off at this point in his career.
The other scenario that I would posit is that the Braves are, you know, just out of playoff contention, which they pretty much already are, and they move Dansby up in the lineup just to get him, you know, the extra, you know, couple at-bats a week just to give him a little more exposure. So that's would be the hope for getting Dansby back in the top of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. At least you guys don't have to worry about Ryan Howard anymore.
Yeah, we were, who did we just sign? Danny Santana?
I don't know, something like that. But you guys cut Ryan Howard, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's no positive. Hey, I'll use this as a transition point, talking about shitty first baseman. Chuck, who was the guy that you were most wrong on this year?
Well, I was most wrong on Yonder Alonso. You know, he's 30 years old already. And some of these peripheral stats are incredible. 51.5% fly ball rate, 39.7% hard hit rate. You know, his BABIP isn't even really that crazy. It's 322. But he has a 356 ISO, and 154 was his highest ISO before this. Or, 154 being the highest projected ISO that he has, but 216 was his highest ISO that he had ever had before this. You know, he's part of two relatively big trades. People seem to believe in him. And all of a sudden, at 30 years old, he becomes the player that San Diego thought they were getting in the Matt Latos trade. This is this just astounds me. He had two home runs on Saturday. He had one home run on Sunday. And I've been trying to figure out a first baseman whose career curve looks like this, and avoiding saying Eric Thames, because Thames is a little bit younger yet even. But this is one of the oddest performance arcs that I can ever remember, because supposedly he really wanted to concentrate on hitting more fly balls, which he's obviously doing. And this is the crown jewel of the off season of people, you know, trying to elevate the ball, you know, launch angle. This is the launch angle poster boy as of right now in Yonder Alonso. So I'm just curious if you guys think that what the odds are that he keeps this up. He's on pace to hit like 35 home runs. So, you know, I wonder, I'll put the over under at 28. Do you think Yonder Alonso gets to 28 home runs, Ben? What do you think?
No, I think he's probably going to settle like 20 to 22. And that's me being generous. I think he could end up hitting 18 and just kind of teeter off a little bit. That's me being really mean.
Yeah, it seems to be pretty negative considering what he's suddenly done. I mean, to be blatantly honest, this is the kind of player that really frustrates me. I mean, there's no, we spend all this time looking at statistics and what have you, and how does a player just like jump out of their skin and do something that we've never thought of? I mean, this is different than the Ryan Zimmerman thing. Ryan Zimmerman was an elite player and injuries beat him down, et cetera. We figured maybe the age curve meant that he couldn't do what he's doing this year, but he had shown this kind of ability before. So Yonder Alonso just completely confounds me. Evan, what are your thoughts on Yonder Alonso, who is on top of the other things? He's hitting 311 with a 386 OBP.
Yeah, about that. I'm going to take the under on the home runs first off. He's currently tied for his career high in home runs at 9. And I think 28 was the number you threw out. I'm going to take the under. Now, you talk about the change in his batted ball profile, which I think has been kind of heavily touted, but he's doing some crazy things while we were talking about his rate statistics. Prior to this year, he'd hit 6 home runs off left-handed pitching in exactly 500 plate appearances. This year, he's got 3 in 21 plate appearances. So, craziness. His career year for power against righties came in 2012, where he hit 8 home runs in 450 plate appearances. He's got 6 in 80 plate appearances. I don't care about, I mean, I care about the emphasis on the fly ball. And I think, as a real quick side note, when analysts talk about things to look for in spring training and they're talking about velocity and walk to strikeout rate, I think with this new mindset of, you know, baseball right now, I think ground ball to fly ball mix is also something we're going to be keeping a big eye on next year. But I just don't see how Alonso, like, sell now. You look at the 9 home runs that he's hit, he's got 14 runs on the season and 24 RBIs, which isn't crazy, but I mean, the Athletics are pretty anemic around him as well. So I would be selling for whatever I could.
Well, I mean, on paper, if you wanted to explain some of it, I mean, he's definitely taking more of a swing for the fences approach, you know, 21.8% is his strikeout rate this year versus, you know, under 14% last year. But this has also generated like, you know, 2.5% jump in his, right, in his walk rate. So, but the ground ball to fly ball rate, he was ground ball to fly ball is unbelievable. The difference, like,
yeah, the one thing I would like to, you know, just kind of point out as an exercise is typically when you see extremely high fly ball rates, like the 51.5% rate that he's showing right now, typically your BABIPs are going to be your BABIPs are going to be lower because the BABIP on a fly ball is lower because they're easily more caught out. Now, he's hitting more of these fly balls out of the park. His home run to fly ball rate is over 25%, which I don't think is sustainable by any stretch of the imagination. So once that all starts to level out, even with the and the crazy thing is that his home run to fly ball rate is that high if he's hitting that many fly balls, because the denominator, sorry if I'm getting really nerdy, should just kind of water it out because he's got so many samples that he's dividing it out against. But yet he's still got this insanely high home run to fly ball rate, and I think that's just screaming to come down to earth.
Yeah, he's one of the most interesting players right now. And like I said, it's just because we haven't seen this any of these propensities from him as a major league player, but he was a highly touted prospect when he was, you know, when back in 2009, 2008, he was considered a top, you know, 15 to 20 prospect. And the main piece that brought Matt Latos, which doesn't sound like much right now, but Matt Latos was a super stud at the time, that brought Matt Latos from San Diego to Cincinnati. So San Diego, if all of a sudden Yonder Alonso is good for the next 2 or 3 years, there's going to be a lot of cursing from people in that were in the San Diego management at the time, because this is the guy that they were hoping that they traded for, this version of him right now. So I've heard a number of pundits that, you know, look at these peripherals and say that nothing really screams out fluke to the whole improvement. Now, that doesn't mean, obviously, that doesn't mean he can sustain some of the incredible rates that we're seeing. But I'm a little more positive on him than you guys are. And I was Mr. Anti-Alonso. I jumped on the A's for trading Drew Pomeranz for Alonso, especially with how dreadful Alonso was, you know, last year in Oakland. And suddenly he's trying to make me look like a fool, which I'm happy for him. You know, he's a Cuban, and his story about getting here has been, you know, much ballyhooed. And he's a person that a lot of people have looked at for the difficulties of assimilating into our country from Cuba. So, you know, I'm relatively happy for him achieving some success. And at the same time, I'm petty enough to be mad because I had completely written him off and he's making me look like an idiot. So there is that. So, well, that's our spiel on Yonder Alonso, who many people out there probably don't realize how well he's playing, but he is absolutely ripping it up, and this came out of nowhere. Like I said, he devoted his offseason to increasing his launch angle, and somehow or another, it's coming to fruition for him. So, you know, a 1,053 is his OPS right now. So.
And I'm trying to pull it up right now. His ownership percentage in ESPN leagues was like less than 40% or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, he's available out there in some leagues.
Yeah. There's a reason. There's, you know, you look at the backlog of data and there's reasons for disbelief. But, you know, people and.
He's
and,
only
you
know, owned in 23.9% of leagues right now. And that's with a 16.2% increase over the last week.
Yeah. So, you know, if you need to catch lightning in a bottle, if 3/4 of the improvements are real, he's going to be well worth a pickup for sure. And so there's, you know, everyone's got different teams at different levels. If you need to take a risk and you need a shot in the arm offensively, I think you should pick up Yonder Alonso and see if he sustains a good portion of the improvements that we've seen so far. So that's my take on Yonder Alonso, who I did not suspect we would be even talking about or thinking about at this point in the season.
Well, thank you for that, Chuck. Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I have a lot of good debates on there. I'd love to hear from you guys if you have anything to say. And then also when you follow me, you'll be able to see I will always put out something about when my Of Note column gets put up every week on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits site. So that's what I do.
And what about you, Evan?
At FWFB, hanging out, talking ball, swing by. Let's chat. Come on. Bring it on.
And I am at BBrands FWFB. Currently, I am just doing this podcast. I will be doing the occasional basketball podcast with Eric Mackey during the summer as the NBA season in the playoffs and the NBA draft comes up. I'll be doing the occasional written article for Friends with Fantasy Benefits for baseball. But outside that, I'm just going to be looking to enjoy as much baseball as I can and not have all my teams have 25% of the rosters injured. So... but for the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.